This is a Triple J podcast.
Prescription pills, it was alcohol, it was ice, it was G.
That may be the view of young people, it's not the view of our government.
If I don't meet a girl, it's pretty hard to tell her that I'm uncontactable.
To connect, to have a good time, to dance it off like nobody's watching.
This is going to have an effect for generations to come. Hack.
Are you unknowingly helping Russia out every time you fill up your car with petrol? Like, could your money be helping fund Russia's campaign in Ukraine? Are we buying blood oil? G'day, it's Dave Marchese with you for Hack. Coming up, the claims that have got Ukrainians here in Australia pretty angry. We're going to find out what is going on there. Also ahead, the warning from Australia's elite women football players. They say we cannot ignore anymore.
You're going to see more and more players leaving, and it's a shame because there's so much talent here.
Yeah, what is behind that? We're going to get into it later. We'll also be checking in on the top end as Cyclone Fina continues to threaten some communities up there. First, though.
Hack. US President Donald Trump has accused Ukraine's leaders of showing zero gratitude over efforts to end the war.
On Triple J.
What's going on with this peace plan in Ukraine? Because the US is promising a lot. There's real hope that Europe's biggest war since World War II could be brought to an end. But at what cost? In a minute, you're going to hear from a Ukrainian about this and the revelations that Australia is indirectly buying Russian oil despite sanctions. But first, here's Alessandroloni.
We thank our big friends, United States and personal President Trump and his team to their commitment to bring this peace.
As representatives of the Ukrainian and American governments meet in Switzerland, there's one thing the Ukrainians really want the US to know. They're thankful and they're trying their best.
Ukrainian people deserve and want this peace more than anyone in this planet.
It's a message the US Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, heard in person in Geneva overnight, but it was really meant for his boss back in Washington, US President Donald Trump.
They said they were ungrateful earlier.
Well, today, and we've talked to him since, I think he's quite pleased at the reports we've given him about the amount of progress that's been made.
Donald Trump earlier posted on Truth Social that Ukraine had expressed, quote, zero gratitude. So what's going on here?
The Americans brought a very serious team to Geneva and so did the Ukrainians to get stuck into the detail of the proposed 28-point plan.
Well, a delegation from Ukraine has been in talks with teams from the US and Europe, and basically the White House is trying to get everyone to agree on its draft 28-point plan to end Russia's war in Ukraine. The proposed peace deal follows secret negotiations by envoys of Russia and the US, and essentially Ukraine would relinquish some of the territory currently controlled by Moscow, reduce its military, and give up on aspirations for NATO membership. In return, Ukraine would get security guarantees and help rebuilding. The plan is widely considered favourable to Russia.
This is literally an ongoing process. We will come back to you later tonight.
Russian missiles tear through the skies over the relatively peaceful western Ukraine.
Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine started in February 3 years ago, and the fighting is still intense. Just days ago, a barrage of Russian missiles hit two apartment blocks in the Ukrainian city of Ternopil, killing 25 people. While Russian officials say Ukrainian drone strikes are hitting targets in Russia, including yesterday on the outskirts of Moscow. With the talks happening in Switzerland, people in Ukraine are worried their country is being asked to give away too much.
If they sign these terms, it won't be very good.
Tatiana is in her 20s. Her husband died while fighting Russia in what used to be the Luhansk region of Ukraine.
Because what did our men fight for? Just so that our land could be taken away?
Territory will be the issue, and I think Ukraine is probably going to have to sacrifice some territory in exchange for perhaps retaining 80% of its territory and preserving its sovereignty.
The parts of Ukraine that the US is proposing Russia would control include Luhansk, Crimea and Donetsk. John Foreman is a former UK defence attaché to both Moscow and Kiev.
It would be extremely difficult, I think, for Ukraine, having sacrificed so much over the last 10 years to preserve and defend those cities, to hand them over.
The deal also calls for Ukraine to cut the size of its armed forces to 600,000 people and commit to not joining NATO.
But the problem is, you know, that Russia is probably going to insist on that, and that's where the key problem's going to be, and will require an awful lot of diplomacy by the Americans to try and find a way through.
Hack on Triple J.
Alice Angeloni reporting there. Look, I want to continue this chat now about Ukraine and Russia because there is another element to this story, to the Ukraine war, that's getting a bit of attention at the moment, especially here in Australia. The fact that you might actually be supporting Russia's war effort every time you fill up your car with fuel here in Australia. Now, there's been a bit of reporting around this. Australia indirectly supplying billions of dollars to Russia because we're importing Russian oil through third countries. So it starts off as Russian crude and then it goes through refineries in other countries and ends up here as petrol and diesel. And according to a non-profit group in Europe, Australia is the world's largest importer of refined fuels made from Russian crude. I want to get into the detail around this a little more. And with us now is Katerina Argeru from the Australian Federation of Ukrainian Organisations. She's also Ukraine's honorary consul in Sydney. Katerina, thank you very much for joining us on Hack.
Thank you for the opportunity.
You're calling this blood oil. What do you mean by that?
It's blood oil because every single dollar that goes to the Kremlin, that goes to Russia, whether directly or indirectly, is currently supporting Russia's war machine.
And, so, continue.
Yeah, and the problem that we have here in Australia, which we are ringing alarm bells and trying to raise public awareness of, is that, as you mentioned, Australia is the number one single importer of refined Russian crude, which means that Australia is the largest financer of Russians' war crimes committed against Ukrainians.
I guess there'd be people listening now thinking, how do we know that this money is going directly to supporting Russia's war effort? Do we know?
We know because there's an independent think tank and research center in Europe called CREA that has tracked tankers coming from Russia, found that they go into third countries like India. One particular refinery in Jamnagar, owned by Reliance Industries, has increased its import of Russian crude, refines it, and then sends it on to other parts of the world. And unfortunately, Australia is such a country that imports from that particular refinery. So we know for a fact that Australia is importing this refined Russian crude in the form of fuel. And if we look at the scale of this problem, there's a very well-known fact and number out there of $1.5 billion that Australia has donated to Ukraine in the form of military and humanitarian aid. If we take that $1.5 billion figure and compare it to how much Australia has paid the Kremlin, that's $2 billion, over $2 billion. So on the one hand, we are supporting Ukraine by sending $1.5 billion to support Ukraine's defense of its own country and territorial integrity. But on the other hand, we're actually financing the Kremlin even more.
And to be clear, Australia stopped buying fuel directly from Russia after the invasion of Ukraine, right?
That's right. Australia has imposed strict sanctions on Russia directly. We don't import anything directly from Russia. And we have imposed sanctions on the shadow fleet. But unfortunately, the biggest loophole that currently exists in those sanctions is this refined crude that's coming from third countries.
Are there a lot of other countries who are buying Russian crude?
Yes, so countries that have been identified, India is one, Singapore, China, those are all countries that Australia does business with. And so that's why we're advocating with the Australian government to close that sanctions loophole and to impose sanctions on those countries which deal with Russian crude.
Have you heard anything from the Australian government?
We are in very close contact with the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. We're in close contact with Minister Penny Wong's office. We have written to the Prime Minister. We have written to the Deputy Prime Minister. We just held an advocacy tour with two officers from Ukraine, which we traveled to four cities, including Canberra. We had over 50 meetings to try and raise awareness about this. So the federal government is certainly aware of it. And even more importantly, we've had partners that we say that we work in lockstep with, like the EU, that passed the 18th package of sanctions, and they have banned the import of refined Russian crude from third countries. The UK followed suit. So it's certainly Australia's turn.
Okay, so the EU and the UK have both closed this loop. loophole. You're calling on the Australian government to do the same. You've also reached out to some of these petroleum companies like BP, others. Who did you reach out to?
We reached out to BP. We reached out to Ampol, to Viva, initially just asking, can they confirm that their supply chains do not deal with refined Russian crude or deal with the Russian Federation in general. They either did not respond or they said that they work in line with Australian sanctions. Now, we all know that you can still be working in line with Australian sanctions, but if there's a glaring loophole which currently exists, then there are ways to get around those sanctions, and importing refined Russian crude from third countries is exactly how you can get around those sanctions.
There might be people listening now thinking, look, maybe there's we can't do everything to stop money from eventually getting to Russia. We don't have a huge role to play here. What would you say to that?
I would completely argue against that. I would say that we have the biggest role to play as Australia, because Australia is the biggest importer of refined Russian crude globally. If the companies that import this fuel do not clean up their supply chains, then it's certainly a role that the government can play. And the way that the government can play that role is by listening to the general Australian public. We had polls done by the AFUO where a very large majority of the Australian population, first of all, supports the Australian government providing aid to Ukraine, but they also, there's an overwhelming majority that support more sanctions on Russia, because a war machine that functions like the Russian Federation must be suffocated of its resources and financing that go towards committing war crimes in Ukraine.
You're listening to Hack. I'm Dave Marchese. I'm speaking with Katerina Argeru from the Australian Federation of Ukrainian Organisations. We're speaking about these revelations of Australia indirectly getting Russian crude that's been refined in third countries, some research finding that Australia could be sending billions of dollars to Russia through this process, and calls for that loophole to be ended. Katerina, I wanted to ask about your personal connection to Ukraine, because obviously you still have family there. Have you been affected by this war over the past few years?
Yes, just like every single Ukrainian worldwide has been affected, I have been impacted as well. I had six of my family members that were serving on the front line in Ukraine since the very first days of the full-scale invasion. I recently lost a cousin of mine, one of my closest cousins on the front line. He was killed in Sumy. I visited him a couple of times and I was in regular contact with him, and it was probably the hardest part of these past 3.5 years is losing someone close and dear, as my cousin was to me. My mom recently had a missile explode right next to her building, which blew out all of her windows, her bedroom door. She injured her head quite badly and ended up in hospital. Now she's in hospital on a weekly basis receiving treatment from that. So I just like every other Ukrainian, I have everything to lose. I worry about my family every single day. I've already lost my cousin. I almost lost my mom. And Ukrainians are being tormented on a daily basis with the war only escalating. There's more drone attacks on a daily basis, more missile attacks, and Russia is going unpunished. They're just becoming more brazen.
I mean, everyone wants this fighting to stop. There's so many people who are really pushing for this peace plan to be implemented. What do you think of the peace plan that is being put forward by the United States?
Well, we completely reject that so-called peace plan as a Ukrainian community here in Australia, because if you look at the points that are proposed, they reward aggression, they pressure Ukraine into surrendering sovereign territory, and it sets a dangerous precedent for our Indo-Pacific region. We have a country that is a sovereign nation that has been invaded by an occupying force, and instead of seeking justice, the U.S. is trying to pressure Ukraine in not only giving up the occupied territory, but ceding additional territory that Russia currently doesn't occupy. Not only is it wrong, it's sick, and something that the Ukrainian community certainly can't support. We do want peace. There's nobody that wants peace more than Ukrainians, more than our Ukrainian community, but it has to be a just peace.
How is the Ukrainian community in Australia going? As part of your official role as the honorary consul in Sydney and, you know, throughout other organisations, you must be speaking with a lot of Ukrainians. How are they doing?
Yes, speaking to them on a daily basis, we try to coordinate our efforts. It's very evident that over the past 3.5 years of a full-scale invasion, despite the fact that we are 15,000 kilometers away, our community lives and breathes Ukraine because we have everything at stake. Our families are back there, our loved ones are back there, and every single night that Ukraine is attacked, it's someone that we could potentially lose. So we have mobilized our community in performing the biggest advocacy effort that our community has probably ever seen. That's why we're trying to get the attention of the Australian federal government to stop financing the Russian war machine. That's why we were asking the federal government to continue supporting Ukraine with more military aid. We're incredibly grateful for all the support that has come from Australia and the Australian people. And Ukraine can't do this alone. So that's why we need help and support of friends like Australia.
Heading into another winter, could be a very brutal winter in Ukraine. Are you worried about attention maybe shifting to other global events and not staying on this war?
Yes, I'm very aware of the media cycle and that it's not always in Ukraine's favor. And sometimes Ukraine is in the news, sometimes it's not. But we have to remember that even when it's not in the news, the Russian Federation does not stop. It attacks Ukraine on a daily basis. The war has only escalated on the front line and the attacks on civilian objects have only escalated. 100% of Ukraine's thermal heating power has been destroyed by the Russian Federation. These attacks are targeted on civilian objects and just the general Ukrainian population is suffering immensely, and going into winter it's going to be very difficult.
Well, look, thank you very much for joining us on Hack. I really appreciate it. Katerina Argeru from the Australian Federation of Ukrainian Organisations, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
And a lot of messages coming through. Someone says this is exactly why we should still have refining capacity on shore. Mick says, well, look, it's all good, well and good to say stop indirectly buying fuel that comes from Russia, but if we did, would that put the price of fuel up for us? Someone else, though, says apparently taking out Russian-originated crude oil from Australian markets won't even result in much higher petrol prices anyway. All right, we've got to move on.
You're listening to Hack.
Recovery efforts are ramping up across the Northern Territory as Darwin cleans up the wreckage from the storm, its worst since Tracy.
On Triple J.
If you've ever experienced a cyclone or a hurricane, it's a scary time. The sound alone can leave you feeling really anxious because there's not much you can do but sit it out. And you've got no idea how bad things are until the storm has passed. Well, Darwin residents went through this over the weekend and they're still cleaning up after they were hit by severe tropical cyclone Fina, the strongest storm to hit Darwin since Cyclone Tracy in the 1970s. Fina is now impacting West Australian communities with warnings in place. Let's find out how things are in the top end. Connor Cartwright is a producer for ABC Radio Darwin Breakfast and he was bunkered down all weekend reporting on the cyclone. Connor, how's it looking in Darwin at the moment?
There is so many trees down. You know, we're very, very lucky that the extent of the damage has pretty much just been a little bit of property and trees. We've obviously not had any loss of life or anything like that. So, yeah, people have been mourning their favourite trees, really. And one iconic tree, it was called the Tree of Resilience, that has lasted through many a cyclone on the Nightcliff foreshore. It used to hang out over the rocks and it was just this iconic thing. And it finally succumbed to the cyclone, I guess, and ended up on the floor.
There's also been some damage to people's homes, is that right?
Yeah, a bit here and there. Fences, a lot of fences going down, some roofs and things like that. But nothing too catastrophic compared to, obviously, a lot of cyclones in the past.
And people are still without power, I believe. Like, do we know how many and how long that's going to last?
Yeah, so at the end of the cyclone, there was about 19,000 houses without power, which is actually a lot of houses in Darwin, so there was whole suburbs without any. And over the last sort of 24 hours, about half of those have had the power turned back on. I know that there's still quite a lot of people without. And yeah, they're getting into, this is like day three without power for them now.
We know that schools were closed as well. Are there any other kind of impacts on the community that people are still grappling with at the moment?
Yeah, so we're looking mainly at schools at the moment. Most people came back to work this morning. But yeah, a lot of people are missing for schools. I felt really sorry for Darwin High and Darwin Middle because they are probably the biggest public school in Darwin, and they were going to be off school today until 8:30 last night, and they managed to get the power back on and they were all back in school today. So, you know, a bit of a kicker at the end of a long weekend.
You were there all weekend kind of helping out with the emergency coverage. What was that like? Was it pretty scary? I imagine you would have been hearing from a lot of locals, a lot of listeners getting in touch.
Yeah, so we had to get in really, really early for our shift. So I wasn't working until later on that night, but we all had to be in the building by like 11, 12 o'clock in the morning just to make sure that we were going to be able to wait out the cyclone together. So there was probably 30 people between the newsroom and the radio room. A lot of people had their family in, a lot of people had their dogs in. And, you know, it was a real community spirit in here. Everyone was looking after each other. I don't know how many cups of tea and cups of coffee I got brought.
And I imagine there would have been some locals who had been through some of the big cyclones in the past. I mean, obviously Cyclone Tracy, but others. Was there a bit of anxiety because there were memories of those larger ones as well?
Yeah, look, the sounds when you're in one of these houses, it's the exact same as all the cyclones before, you know. So we had a lot of messages from Cyclone Tracy survivors who remembered that night and were really heightened by those feelings, who were listening to the ABC. And it was, honestly, I'm talking 50, 60, 70 messages from people in that exact position. And one of the things they said was that this time they had the ABC with them, and that was something that really helped them. And so it really was a privilege for us, not to get too high and mighty about it, but to be there with our community, with our friends, with our families, and be a sort of calm voice for them there when everyone was struggling.
And it's obviously not just Darwin, surrounding communities as well. We know the Tiwi Islands were also hit pretty hard. Were you hearing from people all over the place?
Yeah, we heard from everyone over the night and in the build-up, and you know, a lot of hardy people on the islands and out in the communities. They've experienced plenty of these, so everyone was well prepared. And I've got to say that a lot of the messaging was really, really good in the lead up to the cyclone. Everyone knew what was coming. We'd known for days, and I think the community all over really came together and focused that energy into doing the right thing. And I think that's probably why we've ended up sort of coming off lightly.
Well, Connor Cartwright, producer at ABC Radio Darwin Breakfast, appreciate you coming on. Good luck with all of the cleanup. I'm sure there's quite a bit to do, but thanks for joining us.
Cheerio, thanks.
And remember, if you are in an affected area, keep monitoring ABC local radio. They have all the latest emergency updates.
Hack. Depression, eating disorders and more are on the rise in the A-League women's competition, with financial pressures punishing players chasing their dreams.
On Triple J.
Yeah, just a couple of years ago, it felt like we're on the verge of a massive change. Women's football was all we could talk about. The Matildas games were breaking TV records, stadiums packed for the Women's World Cup. But Australia's newfound love of women's football hasn't really translated into more support for players at a top-tier level in Australia. Like, many women are struggling with psychological distress. They're working multiple jobs just to get by. Jackson Worthington explains.
There's just so many different people that are wanting to play now. We're filling out seven divisions worth of women's football now, which is kind of crazy.
On any given weekend, tens of thousands of women across the country are playing football, or soccer if you prefer to call it that. Participation is booming. Data from Football Australia found participation in women's football grew 16% last year. Kirsty Fraser, who coached under 21's team in Perth last year, reckons the Women's World Cup and the Matildas are a big reason why.
We're quite lucky that they were so successful and worked hard and got there. It's improved the game so much. I don't know whether we're ready for the impact that it had.
That boom at community level isn't translating to top-flight football. The A-League W, Australia's biggest competition for female footballers, has struggled to attract fans, and players still don't have full-time contracts.
This off-season that's just gone, it was probably the hardest time in my life. I didn't have a contract at the time, so I was obviously kind of floating around wondering what I was actually going to do. But it definitely takes a toll, I think, on your mental health.
Izzy Dalton is a delegate for the Professional Footballers Association. The PFA are essentially a union for footballers. She's also the captain of the Perth Glory.
I'm having to do two jobs and study on the side, and I have girls in my team that are working three jobs just to make ends meet.
A recent report from the PFA has found two-thirds of A-League W players experienced psychological distress last season. with 41% experiencing some form of disordered eating and 34% misusing alcohol. 76% of players also reported their financial situation as not at all or only slightly secure. The average wage for an A-League W player is about $30,000 a year. The men's average is about $150,000.
I understand that the revenue piece of it, that they're bringing in more money through fans and stuff like that, but I think there has to be a bit more equality in terms of what we're actually receiving if we're putting in the same effort and time to doing this job.
In a statement, a spokesperson for the Australian Professional Leagues said the A-League is a proven pathway for our next generation of Matildas players and has established itself as one of the best leagues in Asia. The spokesperson said clubs would have an increased salary cap this season and the minimum amount players have to be paid would also increase. But Izzy reckons things are going in the wrong direction. She says players need full-time contracts to be able to compete at the top level.
We need to be employed for a full year. And I think obviously with that obviously means that the minimum wage is going to have to raise and there's going to have to be more funding that goes into the league to make it sustainable.
Next year, Australia will host another big international tournament, the Asian Cup. The Matildas will be back home and football fans are expected to turn out in big numbers. Izzy reckons this is a second chance to showcase women's football, but she's worried about what might happen if the A-League and Football Australia miss it.
If we miss it, I think as a league, it's just going to keep going downhill. I think you're going to see more and more players leaving, and it's a shame because there's so much talent here. It's such a beautiful country to play football in, so like people want to come and do it, but unfortunately, if the wages aren't matching and contracts aren't there, then of course people are going to opt to go out to different leagues.
Hack on Triple J.
Jackson Worthington reporting there, and I'm keen to hear what you think. If you are a football fan, do you see issues with the future of the A-Leagues? Are you worried about a lack of support here through crowds at games? Well, someone who is a big fan is Tracy Holmes. She's from the Sports Ambassador podcast, also an award-winning sports journalist. Tracy, you know women's sport, and we spoke a lot about the Matildas' momentum a couple of years ago around the World Cup. Why don't you think it's translated into more support from crowds at the A-Leagues?
Look, I think it's a combination of factors. You know, there was a great hope that there'd be this trickle-down effect. That's not the way it works. As we know, fans now attach themselves to personal identities, you know, the fans that they want to follow, the Sam Kerrs, the Mary Fowlers. And so wherever they go, that's where the fans go. So they're tuning into some of these overseas leagues that have a much bigger audience, much bigger budget. They can promote their leagues a lot better. And so I think, you know, Australia's kind of falling victim to the fact that we've got a smaller population and a much, much busier sporting calendar. Some of these other countries where, you know, soccer, football ranks 1, 2, 3, 4 down to 10 and every other sport barely counts is very different to the sports market that we have here in Australia. And so it's very difficult for the A-Leagues to have that sort of impact.
Do you think the A-Leagues also have a bit of a reputation problem that needs to be dealt with?
They certainly do. And there's been a lot of angst over, you know, the financial sustainability of some of the clubs here and just where the A-Leagues are going. There seems to be a real lack of promotion. There's not very much creativity in the way they go about selling their product, and it just gets lost in that huge, huge schedule of events that we have here and on offer every single day of the week in Australia.
So what happens now? Because we've just heard from players who are warning that women are leaving the sport and will continue to leave the sport because they're struggling, not just financially, but psychologically as well. How do we turn this around?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, one of the key factors would be full-time professionalism, but we also have to take into account some of the things that we've already noted, you know, the size of the population here and the very congested market. So if you can make it sustainable, you can make it financially worthwhile for the clubs, and they can see the benefit of investing further in the Women's League, giving players full-time salaries, then there's less temptation to either move overseas to some of the other leagues right throughout Europe or across to the US or other places, Or in fact, just move across to other sports that are on offer. So the women's, rugby league, for instance, or women's AFL. I mean, there are so many options now, but full-time professionalism would be one of the key drivers to keeping people engaged and keeping some of the stars here in Australia.
Which is what we're hearing from a lot of those players right now. I mean, Tracy, we're hosting the Asian Cup next year, the Matildas back competing in Australia. How do we capitalise on that, do you think?
Oh, definitely. And we've got the Matildas even competing this weekend against New Zealand on Friday in Gosford and next Tuesday in Adelaide. So there's no lack of support for the Matildas. And what needs to happen now is, instead of this idea that that's just going to trickle downwards, there has to be some sort of investment and much more creativity and thought that goes into the marketing of the game from upwards. Because we also know that grassroots is huge. Lots of young girls signing up to play. But we've got to find a way of connecting those two, the grassroots, absolute enthusiasm, the support for the Matildas on top, and how we make those two meet in the middle.
Tracy Holmes from the Sports Ambassador podcast, and also the author of your book, Tracy, The Eye of the Dragonfly, which is out now. Go read it. It's a really fascinating read that covers some of the big events in sport that Tracy's covered over the last few decades. Trace, thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And a lot of people backing up Tracy's comments there in terms of marketing. Someone says the AFLW grew its fan base when they put efforts into marketing. I haven't seen any marketing for the League W, and they're not paying well, so no wonder there's no growth. Someone else says just pay these players well, sorry. And some other messages coming through on the Cyclone Fina. Someone saying they were really happy to hear from Connor, his positivity there, reporting from Darwin. But also Chris, who says, I'm on a cotton farm just north of Kununurra. We've been lucky so far, but we're still on for a few more days of unsettled times. The low could still head our way. So yeah, if you are in those cyclone affected areas, make sure you're listening to ABC Local Radio for all the latest updates. But that is all we have time for on Hack for now.